those circuses on the air.
All right, you know what that music is. It's Dave Blyer on 720 WGN. For over 40 years, the Annex of Bozo, Ringmaster Ned, Oliver, Oliver, Sandy, Cookie, Wizzo, Rusty, Bob Trendler's Big Top Band, and Professor Andy delighted generations of children. 55 years ago today, from September 11th, 1961 through the summer of 2001, circus acts, cartoons, and the grand prize game entertained a cast of thousands. With a 10-year waiting list for tickets, each show offered pure fun, a dash of vaudeville, and talents of Bob Bell, Joey Deoria, Don Sandberg, Roy Brown, and Marshall Brodeen, among others. The live hour-long show, if you can, you know, you think about this, a live hour-long show with an orchestra that aired every day when Chicago Public Schools and the schools, you could go home for your lunch and go watch Bozo before you went back to school. What? How cool would have that been? You know, I grew up in the 70s, so we didn't get to come home for lunch. You had to be sick to come home and watch Bozo.
Right. But I did.
In the 60s, you did.
Awesome.
Of course you did. Yeah.
I walked two blocks, my grade school, Oakton Grade School in Evanston. And it was at Ridge and Oakton. And I walked two blocks through the alley, going home for lunch, grabbed lunch while watching Bozo. Didn't get to watch the whole thing, because then had to get back for school again.
Couldn't get through the Grand March.
Right, because they didn't serve lunches at school. There were no meals at all.
Right.
You know, now everything's served. You can go in early for breakfast. You can stay after school for snacks. You got lunch. You went home and I used to grab my peanut butter and jelly sandwich and glass of milk and sit down with a little tray and watch TV and made sure I didn't make a mess on the carpet.
Yeah.
And this was the TV you had to actually get up and change the channels and turn on and off with no remote. I know it seems ancient to some people.
You know what? I got to tell you, I was five. Now, this is a true story. My mother told me that, you know, my parents had a bar in the basement, like every Chicago home had a bar downstairs. And my dad had a tapper in it, I believe, with Michelob in it, okay? And he locked the bar. You know, he locked it down. But he used to have these little three-inch little beer mugs. And they were just little tiny, almost like shot glasses, but beer mugs.
Yeah, right.
And my mother came down one day to bring me lunch because I was watching Bozo, and she noted that I had one of those little beer mugs because I thought they were for me years old.
Sure. and having little drinks.
So. And I would go fill up. I would climb over the top of the bar and go get my beer.
Oh, you.
That's terrible.
You were buzzed watching Bozo, huh?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Jay at 262 mentions the hosiery they used to give away during the grand prize game.
Oh, yeah, to the mothers?
Sheer top hosiery or a gift certificate to a salon, De Paris on Michigan Avenue, I think is what it was. But it was, you know, it was like I can't remember the exact hosiery, but it was a sheer top hosiery or something like that. 219 says, I will remain seated today during the Bozo Grand March Parade to protest clown oppression.
Oh, come on.
That's a good one. I like that. So I went on the show. So my mother sent away for tickets. And, and by the way, phone lines are open, 312-981-7200, if you got some great little Bozo circus memories you want to mention or anything you used to love watching on that show. Favorite characters, all kinds of good things. So 67, she wrote away for tickets. And we got to go, I think it was 1979. It was 12 years that we waited.
Oh, my goodness. You had to wait that long.
Yeah. So wow. I think it was 11 or 12 years old. And there was two things I remember is, number one, waiting in that long hallway. Number two, needing to go to the bathroom before the show started. And I got escorted by an usher out to the restroom. And on the way back, took a wrong turn. And this is a true, true story. And I'm not, no BS. I took a wrong turn, walked down the hallway, and ended up going into Studio 2, where Phil Donahue was sitting with his, I guess, producer and took me back to the studio himself and walked me back to my seat. And, of course, he was the man.
Oh, yeah.
Back then. And my mother, I remember being like, oh, my God, it's Phil Donahue. And I don't even think I knew who he was.
Yeah, but she did.
But she knew who he was.
Oh, you better believe she did.
And I did not get picked for the grand prize game, but I got picked for the game at the end of the show where I believe I participated with a lovely young lady to carry a balloon between our heads back and forth and dumping them in the buckets. And we won, and I got the grand prize game take-home edition as a gift.
No, with the buckets and everything.
With the buckets
That's
and everything.
Very cool.
And, you know, I got involved with the Broadcast Museum the night after the last show aired because they were looking for new people. And I remember talking to Bruce Dumont, and I remember talking to Angel Harvey about doing that.
Right.
And what happened was... my agency, because I own a marketing firm, when we opened up the new museum, we rebuilt. I bought the old Bozo musical organ that was on the set at an auction and donated it to the museum. And the parts had the colors of the original set. So I had a young designer who's never seen a stitch of Bozo redesign the 70s set, and that's what's at the museum. So we built that whole set. That's down there. And in 2005, when Dean and Dean Richards and George Pappas, who was the executive producer, and Jeff Hoover, who was the executive producer or producer on the WGN Morning News, produced Bozo, Gar, and Ray, the museum was closed. And they said they really wanted to bring back a lot of the props to film that. So that's what I did. That's the role I played, is we made sure
that stuff is from you guys.
Yeah, we brought it back over there, and you know, the drum skins were pretty weak, so my agency recreated the Bozo drum skin, and we put it in, and it was amazing because I was there the whole day to film that. And what we did, there's a plaque outside of Studio One where they filmed Bozo, Ray Rayner, Garfield Goose, Romper Room.
Was the Dick Tracy show shot there,
yes,
too?
Yes, thank you very
You're
much.
Welcome.
The Dick Tracy, thank you very much. Family Classics, all that. They would just bring the sets in front of the Bozo stage, or Bozo seats.
Right.
Because
that was a huge studio.
You know what?
It looked huge on TV.
It's just, it's not. What's still left in that studio are the pillars from the last Bozo show. Because we have a lot of it at the museum. There's the tape on the floor that's kind of rubbed off where kids stood to play the grand prize game. It's still there. And the canvas big top that when they panned up, when they had big circus acts from the 60s, very brittle, still sitting up there. And confetti still sitting up there from whenever they would do that. I had a cousin that taped when I was on the show, taped it. They ended up taping the 85 Super Bowl over it.
No! Oh, no!
Think about that. Think about having that tape with you from Bozo
Circus.
Yeah.
That would have been so cool.
But what they did have is when I was an altar boy on Mass for Shut-Ins on Channel 9.
They still got that tape.
They still have that one. But they don't have the Bozo. How horrible is that?
Oh, God.
So, you know, my mother, you know, as she knows, I've been involved with the Broadcast Museum for years, and we rebuilt the Ray Rayner set. We did all kinds of stuff for the museum. She says to me a couple years ago, you know, I think, and we're looking for artifacts, so I think I have your tickets. I think I have pictures of you on the set. I think I have all the buttons. I think I have all kinds of stuff somewhere downstairs from when you went to the Bozo show, and we ended up having it framed and put in my office in the house. But big memories. I mean, you know, the grand prize game, that was a highlight. That was something that Don Sandberg, who played Sandy the Tramp, came up with. It was only going to be a game for a few weeks. It was never intended on lasting, and it really became one of the most iconic parts of that show.
We played it at one of my daughter's birthdays.
Yeah.
And we were in the apartment we're in now. So it was about maybe 30 years ago that I think we played, maybe 28 years ago.
We just played at our block party because still sell them at the museum. So you can go to museum.tv or go down to the museum. You can still, they're like packaged almost like exactly those. And then we're also getting back into stock this fall. We had the original bucket number six made into garbage cans. And so they're really tall, big, oversized bucket number sixes you can get.
Now, do they all come with a silver dollar?
They don't. You know what's in the museum, though, is in the exhibit. Now, we built the old audience curves that used to hold the kids in. We rebuilt those for the exhibit because they're holding the glass that holds. In bucket number six, and very few people know this, Jim Engle had this, who's a children's historian and has done so much for our broadcast museum. He has put Mr. Ned's leather pouch with his silver dollars in bucket number six. Aww. So you can't, you really got to look over the wall to see it, but they're in there. But this show, 200 member audience.
Mm-hmm. A cast of thousands.
Yes. Went national on cable and satellite on the superstation in 78. In 80, went to weekday mornings because kids weren't going home from school anymore. Ray Rayner retired at that time, mm-hmm. I think around that time, or was getting close to. It was taped. And then in 94, 14 years later, moved to Sunday mornings.
Right.
Which is kind of a bummer.
A lot of tape segments there, too.
Yeah, but, what really did push me into joining the museum board, and Joey's telling me to wrap it up because we got to get to Marshall Brodeen's interview, is that it was my birthday. It was July 14th, 2001, mm-hmm. where that last episode aired with from Smashing Pumpkins, Billy Corgan was on the show.
Performing, sure.
And I taped it on a video cassette in 2001.
And you didn't record over it, did you?
No, I did not.
Thank goodness.
My son was 5 months old, 4 months old. My wife went to bed, and I went downstairs with another beer, and I sat down and watched it. And I hadn't thought of that show in 30 years. And when I watched, I thought to myself, the memories growing up with them.
Yeah.
So not many performers left from that show. Joey DiOrio, the second Bozo, still alive and well in California.
Working every day.
Yep. And Don Sandberg, Sandy, still around in California, retired, of course. Marshall Brodeen. Marshall Brodeen's got has Alzheimer's. And we're going to talk after his interview briefly about Mary Doyle Brodeen, his wife, lovely woman, is participating in the 2016 Walk to End Alzheimer's, and she's got a page, and this event is taking place on, I believe, Joey, if you can look it up for me, September 24th, but an advocate, obviously, for Alzheimer's,
sure.
But I talked to Marshall just a few years ago about his career doing magic for the Mafia. And and working and developing, he did TV magic cards, but he also did magic kits for like Siegfried and Roy and all the big magicians. Mm-hmm. So, he was an entrepreneur. He worked at Riverview. He's got great stories to tell, and we're going to get to that next with Marshall Brodeen next on 720 WGN.
Have you washed your hair today?
Yes, I have.
Have you shined your shoes?
Yes, I
have. You pressed your pants?
I guess.
Did you wash your ears? Did you take a shower?
I washed my ears.
Did you take a shower?
I washed my hair.
Did you take a shower?
I cleaned my shoes.
You're evading the question. Either that or you didn't hear me, and I think you heard me. Did you? You didn't take a shower today, did you? I got wind of that when you walked in.
It's Dave Player on 720 WGN. We're celebrating the 55th anniversary of the debut of WGN-TV's Bozo Circus. I love those little bits. It was just as much for adults as it was for kids. One of the stars of Bozo for over 30 years was magician Marshall Brodeen, who appeared as himself and as Wizzo the Wizard and as Stone of Zanzibar. I had a chance to talk to Marshall back in 2013. While we talked about his magic, Riverview and Bozo, I asked him when he first discovered his interest in magic.
Magician in school when I was 8 years old in the auditorium, and I thought that was really neat. I wish I could do that kind of stuff. And close to where I lived, there was a shop where they sold magic tricks, and I started buying the magic tricks in there, and then I got connected to magic.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's how it all started. Well, you were barely a teenager, and you started already, with all the magic tricks that you bought at the store. You were doing magic shows for the neighborhood kids, birthday parties, Cub Scout meetings. You already made yourself a well-known act out there.
It was a lot of fun. I was, I think, 16 years old or 15 years old.
Yeah. And you hung around the magic shops when you were a kid, and there was a magic shop where the professional shopped, run by Joe Berg, that you visited often.
And that was was downtown in the Loop on Dearborn Street, and I used to get down there as much as I could. Then there was also one on Randolph Street, the Chicago Magic Center, and I hit those places all the time.
I bet. What kind of impression did Joe Berg make on you?
Joe Berg was a very smart guy and had just about every trick you can buy in the market, and I kept going down there to buy my tricks. And then Abbott's Magic, which is still in business in Colon, Michigan, and I used to go to their shop they had in Chicago on Randolph Street. And
with George Kuhn.
George Kuhn, yeah.
And that's where you bought your first famous trick, the Hippity Hop Rabbits, I believe.
That's right, at Abbott's Magic.
What did that trick do? What was the
well,
basis?
You have cut out rabbits. One is white, one is black, and you cover them with covers, and they change places. The white one ends up where the black one was, and the other one. And as you do it, you turn the whole thing around the tube, and the people think that what he's doing is on the back of the black rabbit is a white rabbit, and vice versa. So at the end, the people say, "We know that's done. Turn them around. When you turn them around, one's red and one's yellow."
Everyone's always trying to figure out your acts, aren't they?
Right. Yeah.
Well, you know, at such a young age, you were pretty entrepreneurial at that time. You decided to have your first professional photo taken once you bought those rabbits to show yourself off as a magician.
Right. I remember that.
Yeah, and there was a place called Finer Amusements that you started to hang around with Bobby Bear and George Wilhelm. And you ended up working there for quite some time.
Yeah, I worked there for a couple of years. That was right across from the Oriental Theater in Chicago on Randolph Street. And I was there for several years.
Now, did you do demonstrations as well? I mean, you obviously worked there, but I'm assuming when you work in a magic shop, you got to show how these tricks work.
Yeah, this was a magic shop that in the back had a penny arcade, and one section they sold jewelry and souvenirs and everything. Right up in the front was the magic convention, the magic section, and I would stop people and do magic. And finally, people started coming in there to buy magic, and it lasted a long time.
Well, they started to get to know you as well.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, then you then got hired by the Treasure Chest, and that was known as Chicago's Magic Center on Randolph in Chicago,
yeah.
And you started demonstrating magic tricks there. Tell me about your experience there.
That was the same place. It used to be on Wabash Avenue, and they moved over to Randolph Street across mm-hmm. the Oriental Theater, and I moved over there with them. And people would come in, and I'd demonstrate tricks and sell them.
And that was a lot of fun. And, you know, there was a magician, and a lot of the professionals shop there. So there was a magician by the name of Don Lieberman that came into the store and chatted with you for a little while about some opportunities.
Right.
And he wanted you to stop by and see him when he was at Riverview.
Right. That's exactly right.
And really, that's how you got into there. I mean, there was a opportunity for you to do some magic, and Don told you when you went and visited him that he was looking for a new magician, but at 17 years old, he thought you were a little bit too young.
Right. I went out there to see the magician, and the owner said, Dick Best said he disappeared. So I told him, I'm a magician. He's how old are you? I was 16 years old. He said, well, you're kind of young. I said, well, I'll come out and work for you for nothing. First day or second day and see how I'm doing. So I left the magic shop and went out there and spent the whole season there. And after that, they took me on the road when they traveled the show around the country on fairgrounds.
Sure. And what was really nice is the owner of the Treasure Chest, he let you go out and do those things in the off-season.
Exactly. And then yeah. When I got through with that, I went back into that magic center.
Yeah, not a lot of bosses would let you do that. He was a very supportive guy.
Yeah, he was like a second father, really.
Yeah.
Very nice man.
Yeah. And then you were at Riverview. Tell me about your experiences at Riverview. You got all kinds of Barker calls and everything that you remember working there.
I went out to see a magician called Mickey the Mook at the Freak Show. And I got there, and the owner of the Freak Show says, he's no longer here. He disappeared. I said, what do you mean? He says, the next day he didn't come. All his stuff was gone. And I said, well, you need a magician, don't you? And he said, yeah, I do. I said, I'm a magician. He said, you're a pretty young guy. I was 16, 17 years old. I said, well, I'll come out and do a day for nothing for you and show you what I can do. So he's come out and do it. So I told the people at the magic shop, and they said, that's okay, Marsh. You love that stuff, so go and do it. When you're through, we'll take you back in the shop. So I went out there and stayed there, and They like the way I talk, so they say you'll make more money stopping crowds of people with magic and give them a pitch on the sideshow, the Monkey Girl and the Alligator Skin Man and Swords, Water Player, all those characters. And I stayed there, and then the show went on the road, and he took me on the road as a young fella and went to different states and fairs, you know, fairgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
Did magic there for a while, and then went back to Chicago.
Do you remember some of those pitches when you were at Riverview, what you used to say to people to get people's attention?
Oh, well, yeah, we had Priscilla the Monkey Girl and Emmett the Alligator Skin Man. They were married, and the Monkey Girl, she was a woman. She had a beard and a lot of hair all over her body. So she was Priscilla the Monkey Girl, covered from the top of her head to the toes of her feet with rough, tough corrugated. No, that's the Alligator Skin Man with long, black, shaggy hair, just like a monkey. Two rows of teeth in the upper jaw like the anthropoid ape, pouches in the side of her mouth where she could store food for days at a time if necessary. So she was married to the Alligator Skin Man, covered from the top of his head to the toes of her feet with rough, tough corrugated hide laid out in checks and squares like that of a crocodile. Skin so rough and tough you couldn't penetrate it with the sharpest knife. Sheds his skin twice a year like the crocodile. Keeps his body moist in cold water. Stuff like that.
They sounded like a nice couple, Marshall.
Yeah, they were married.
That's funny.
Doors, flowers, and fire eaters and all that.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, what were some of the other acts that were there at the show that used to get people's attention for?
Oh, yeah, the fire and the Swords War. That's where I learned to eat fire and swallow swords. Then we had the four-legged girl. She had the body of her twin sister growing out of the side of her body.
Wow.
It was really strange. And then we had the armless wonder, did everything with his feet. He'd operate a typewriter, paint with oil colors, thread a needle, so shuffle and deal a deck of playing cards. Very strange guy.
That was really where you cut your teeth, really, in performing in front of live audiences and so forth.
I mean, yeah.
That was a great experience. How long were you at Riverview? Do you remember?
I was for a whole season, and when the season was over, they took the show on the road, and I talked to my mother and asked her if I could go with it because I was about 17 years old, and she says, yeah. So I went around the country on state fairs all over the country for about 4 or 5 weeks, and learned a lot on that.
And then when you turned 21, you performed magic in many popular clubs. Tell us specifically about this, about Cicero's Magic Lounge, because that was a pretty famed place in the city.
Yeah, at that time I used to go out there. I was only about 18 years old or so, 17 years old. They let me come in the Magic Lounge. At that time, Cicero was wide open across the street. They had gambling slot machines, and in the back room they had you know, all kinds of card games going, and they had a strip show next to it where the dancers would dance and that. And people would come into the Magic Lounge, and I'd do magic and then put on a show at night, two shows a night, and then behind the bar and at the tables, I'd do close-up magic. And I stayed there for a couple of years, I believe.
Yeah, and you had some run-ins, obviously, being in Cicero. You had some run-ins with Chicago's most visible mob figures of the day as well.
Yeah, I did. I remember one night, two guys sat down at the end of the bar, and the bartender said, go show those guys a trick. And I had this bird cage with a rubber bird in there, and I'd say, tap the cage three times, the bird disappears. He taps it three times. He's excited to see the bird. Hey, Tony, you see the bird? What's this bird stuff, you know? And I'll clean it up a little bit. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, you hold the cage. And he reaches for the cage, and the cage vanishes just like that, so fast you can't even see where it goes. He says, what are you doing with the cage? What are you asking me for? Ask the magician. He says, where is that cage? I said, it's magic. Hey, Tony wants to know where the cage is. Well, I can't tell him. It's a magic trick. This guy pulls out a gun, hits my head with it, and clicks it back and says, where is that friggin' cage? And that cage came out of my sleep.
I bet it did.
It sure did. And when they left, the bartender says, you know what, those two guys, that one guy's a hitman for the outfit. And they're very dangerous guys. I said, oh, wow. So when they'd come in there once in a while, I'd real fast go across the street and get a cup of coffee.
I bet you did.
Yeah. I'll never forget that guy putting a gun to my head.
Yeah. Well, then after that, you spent some time entertaining at the Cairo Supper Club. Tell me a little bit about the Cairo.
That one, I went to the Cairo. They had three different hypnotists. There were Dr. Mike O'Dean, Dante, and one other one. I forgot his name. And that was my dream, to work the Cairo Supper Club. That was on Sheridan Road in Irving Park. So the guy came in and saw me one time, and he said, man, you do a great job. And Ted Boyer and Dr. Mike O'Dean, they went to Las Vegas. He said, I'd like to put you in there. And that's after I sold the place to someone. So I left there. I went to no, that wasn't after I went out of the Army. I went to, was at the Mystic Club, and then I went into the Cairo Supper Club on Sheridan Irving Park. And I stayed there for a couple of years until it was bombed.
Until it was bombed, did you say?
TV one morning, I said to my wife at that time, I'm out of a job. They threw a bomb, and it was a beautiful place, and bombed the place.
Wow.
So I was out of business there. Hugh Hefner came in and saw me, invited me to his house, and I did some hypnotic stuff and all that stuff, and he called me in his offices and says, how would you like to work the Playboy clubs around the United States?
Yeah, what kind of offer is that? That is phenomenal. Look at that.
You know what I said to him? Oh. Oh, God, would I love to do that. And I had the same thing with Vegas, the Frontier Hotel. I had an agent come in and wanted to take me to Vegas. I said, I just got married, and how do I go with the Playboy clubs all over the country?
Yeah. That would be hard to explain, I would think.
He says, take your wife with. I said, are you serious?
Yeah, right.
I said, I can't do it, so I didn't do it.
Well, I'll tell you what. Coming up next, Marshall's first appearance as a magician in the center ring of WGN-TV's Bozo Circus, his nearly 30-year stint as Wizzo the Wizard, and much more with Marshall Brodeen when we get back. It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN.
Hi, I'm Marshall Brodeen, a professional magician. You know, most magic tricks are easy once you know the secret. Now, take magic cards. You don't have to be a magician to perform all kinds of amazing card tricks because it works by itself. Have someone take a card, place it back in the deck. Tap the deck, it comes to the top. Put it back in the middle, and it's back on top again. Make two or three piles. Whatever pile they point to, the card is there. Now, for more fun, take the top card, tap it, and it changes to their card. Place it on the bottom, and they all change to their card. Cut the deck, and they're all different again. 6 or 60, you can work TV magic cards, the mechanical deck that works all by itself.
State Player on 720 WGN. We're talking about the 55th anniversary of Bozo Circus on WGN-TV. Talking to Marshall Brodeen, theatrical agent Howard Schultz booked the legendary Marshall Brodeen to do some magic on the show, performing in the center ring just a few months after its premiere.
Oh, I thought it'd be great, so I went on there as a magician. And what I did, I put tricks together to where I could use the characters in the show, you know? And they liked that, and that was the first time they had a magician on that did some stuff with the characters, plus the other magic. So they brought me on more than they usually bring an act on. They bring me, like, once a month, and then two times a month. And then I did a show for the at McCormick Place for a company where they put me in a wizard costume. It was a don't buy foreign products and all that.
Yeah, it was 1968. It was for the American Gas Association.
Exactly.
And it was the Arabian Nights theme for the entire event.
Exactly. And they gave me the, you know, they let me have the costume. And when I left, I showed it to Don Sandberg, who was a producer of the Bozo Show.
And Sandy the Tramp.
Mm-hmm. Sandy the Tramp. And he said, why don't you wear that on the show? We'll call you the wizard, you know. And I went out there, and I started getting crazy with the magic. And they said, we've got to do it again. So I did it like 3 weeks in a row, and people loved it. And that was it. And about a month went by, and Sandberg called me. He said, we're getting so many calls. When is the wizard coming back? I said, really? He said, yeah, how would you like to work it once a week? You know, one day a week. I said, I'd love to do that. So I would get paid a good price because I'd pay as an act gets on there, you know.
Sure.
So four times a month for about 2 months. And it was going over so good, they said they want to hire me as a regular on the show.
That's amazing. And that was about the same time, too, that, you know, Ray Rayner was leaving the show and so forth. Yeah, and Roy Brown.
I was with him for a while, and then he left.
Yeah, Roy was, you know, he was a puppeteer on Garfield Goose, and he joined the cast as Cookie the Cook, and, you know, you guys had a pretty good friendship over the years. Well, later that year, this first year that you started with Bozo Circus, you know, Bob Bell, and not too many people know this, he suffered an aneurysm, and he was off the show for nearly 6 months. So
right. At
that time, you were doing the show 5 days a week. I mean, you were really filling those big shoes.
Right. That was fun. Except tiresome, you know.
I bet. Oh, I bet.
Different bits to do with magic. So it turned out pretty good.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, when I was a kid growing up, and I was born in 67, when I would watch Bozo Circus as a kid, you know, I swear when the show opened would happen and I knew that you were going to be on the show and I saw you appear, I knew it was going to be a pretty kick-ass show. You know, I knew it was going to be a great show. Tell me a little bit about working with Bob Bell.
Bob Bell, working with him was great. He was a great performer and a very nice man. And really, you know, did a great job and was really into what he did. He was really Bozo, you know. Same with Cookie. He was great. He was a super performer. It was a good show.
Well, you had the Stone of Zanzibar that you kind of found in a store, and I know you know, Bob had all kind of double entendre little jokes that went over the kids' heads right to the adults, and he talked to you about that stone one day.
Oh yeah, I walked up to him to touch you with the Stone of Zanzibar, and he said, "I remember when you got stoned at the Zanzibar." And he knew how far he could go. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
sometimes he'd really break you up.
Yeah, sure. You know, and it was every day. It was, you know, you got an outline for the show pretty much. I mean, there wasn't really any script, so to speak. I mean, you would pretty much go off the top of your head and play within these skits. And so that must have been just a pretty incredible experience.
It was great. I really enjoyed it.
Did you feel comfortable doing that without a script and just kind of lamming it along the way? Because that's kind of how you performed over the years, right?
Yeah, right. It was fun. I had a lot of lines to had to be in it, and I do them, but I do a lot of ad-libbing too, and they liked it. They said it was okay.
Well, you were you know, there was the Three Bears sketch that was probably the most.
I'll never forget the Three Bears because Bob Bell was on. He knew how far he could go in saying things,
mm-hmm.
And we go to the Three Beds there. I'm Papa. I'm Mama Bear.
Right.
And he's Papa Bear and Cookie's Baby Bear. So we walk into their place there, and where our beds are, and Cookie, someone's been sleeping in my bed. And then I go on, I say, Papa, someone's been sleeping in my bed. Well, don't look at me. Anybody that sleeps deserves what they get. And the audience goes crazy. You know?
Of course. Because, yeah, I mean,
you really had fun with it, yeah.
Well, you were really talking to the adults, too, which is what really made it so... So incredibly special. And, you know, even while you were on the show, you still entertained and did stage shows and stuff as Marshall Brodeen, but you also toured with your good friend Roy Brown as Cookie.
Oh, a very good friend. We became friends, and I lived in a building in Roselle, and he got divorced and everything, and I said, well, I got an empty apartment there. You can take it. And he took the apartment, so we'd drive together to work and back on that.
You worked on the show daily, and then in 1994, you finally decided to retire. And, you know, the show was no longer going to be on 5 days a week, but you still continued to make special appearances as Wizzo up till the final show in 2001.
Yeah, right.
You know, there was a famous story that happened. It was actually right around the time that you were getting involved with Bozo Circus. You made an appearance on the Mike Douglas show, and you performed with comedian Bill Cosby.
Yeah, I did three appearances on there, once with Bob Cosby and one with Tony Bennett and Louie Nye. And I was on there three times. But Bill Cosby, it was great. He was a great guy to work with.
Did you hypnotize him?
No, I did hypnosis, but not real hypnotism. Once I did hypnosis on the show, but one time I did illusions, and I pretend to hypnotize him, and I put him between two brooms his feet on one broom upside down, you know, and his head on the other, and then I take it away and I'm floating him in the air. And I put a hoop through it, you know, all the way through, showing him he's floating in the air. And he says, I says he could remain there on the broom for hours if necessary. And he opens his face, not really, man, you know. He did a lot of ad-libs that were very funny on that. And I took him down off that and did some other things with him.
Well, you've talked about so many of the people that were mentors to you in these magic shops and these magicians that took you along the way. And I know you're a very humble guy, but you also have been a mentor to so many up-and-coming magicians. You have always taken the time to spend time with them like others have given you.
Oh, yes, I do. I enjoy talking with them.
These are all the people that looked up to you, not only locally but nationally, as, I mean, you become a world-renowned magician, and what an incredible career that you've had, and what a pleasure it has been to spend some time with you today.
Oh, great. Well, thank you for calling and getting hold of me. That was really great.
All right. Thank you for sharing your life stories with us. And TV Magic Cards and Marshall's TV Magic Show are available again at Amazon.com. And if you are visiting the Museum of Broadcast Communications in downtown Chicago, the museum store sells them both as well. And his book,
published several years ago, The Magical Life of Marshall Brodeen. It's really an interesting read about his career, and we only gave you a few tidbits here. That's also available at Amazon.com. Thanks again, pal.
Thank you.
And that is the legendary Marshall Brodeen. And by the way, currently more than 5 million Americans have Alzheimer's, and that number is expected to grow to as many as 16 million by 2050. Few of us will be untouched. If not us, someone dear will be affected. Marshall is one of those who already has the disease. Now, you can help by making a donation to help the Alzheimer's Association advance research into methods of treatment, prevention, and ultimately a cure. You can go to act.alz.org. For this walk to end Alzheimer's happening in St. Charles. Mary Doyle Brodeen, Marshall's wife, is participating in this on the September 24th. And again, if you want to donate, go to act.alz.org. Much more ahead on 720 WGN.